Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
In this edition, I'd like to talk about muscle, M-U-S-C-L-E, muscle, and how it functions in the body. Muscle is to the athlete, bodybuilder, and fitness buff what the cosmos is to Carl Sagan or Stephen Hawking. We aspire to it, dream of it, and fantasize about it. Muscle affects how we look and feel. It directs every boxer's jab, it generates the force behind the archer's bow, and orchestrates the beauty and majesty of the ballerina. Every athlete involved in sport, every mother with kids, and every dad at the office benefits by improving their muscle quality, strength, size, endurance, and power. Countless numbers of men and women all over the world pump iron to improve muscularity, reshape their physique, build strength, and enhance their definition. Even golfers like Tiger Woods train with weights to improve their form and function. Muscle is our fat-burning engine. It drives our metabolic rate up, and it also sustains our immune system. Through a complex and intricate relay system involving our conscious mind, motor unit response, and cellular energy metabolism, movement of the entire body is facilitated in a very unique and harmonious fashion. And it does this with muscle. Although bones and joints form the frame of the body and provide leverage, motion cannot occur without the alternating contraction and relaxation of muscle. Muscle serves the body in many ways. Some of its most important functions include the generation of heat, typically referred to as thermogenesis, the utilization of stored body fat and glycogen as fuel, stability of body position and posture, regulation of organ function, elimination of waste through peristalsis, the circulation of blood, the endogenous or internal production of amino acids required for immune cell replication, and of course, the ability to move in sport, recreation, and athletic activities. If you're powerful, it's because your muscles are able to convert chemical energy derived from food into a form of mechanical energy that generates the force required to perform work and move mountains. The prime function of muscle is strength and the generation of power, a feature never revealed without motion. The first generation of muscle fibers begin to appear in human skeletal muscle as myotubes and myofibers between the 8th and 10th week of gestation. Second generation muscle forms around these primary fibers during weeks 10 to 18, and by the 5th month, the fibers take shape as large diameter type 1 fibers. Type 2 fibers are recognizable by the 32nd week. Throughout various stages of embryonic development, muscle fibers eventually rise from the fusion of many smaller cells. This is why each fiber has many nuclei instead of only one, and this explains how muscle is able to synthesize new proteins with such remarkable efficiency. The muscular limbs of newborns and young infants contain approximately 40 to 45% type 1 fibers, whereas the muscles of children aged 2 to 5 have slightly higher percentages in the range of about 60%. After age 5, the number of type 1 fibers decreases to about 50%. These changes in fiber composition take place without change in the actual number of fibers. Gender differences in fiber type and size first appear at puberty. The cross-sectional area of individual fibers is generally smaller in the female. Males tend to have larger type 2 fibers than type 1, whereas the opposite is true for females. Their type 1 fibers have a greater diameter than their type 2. In adults, women have significantly less numbers of fibers that are smaller, accounting for a 30 to 40% lower contribution of total muscle mass compared to men. Large variations exist between individuals of the same sex for total fiber numbers, fiber size, and fiber type distribution. Skeletal muscle exhibits a high degree of plasticity. Environment and genetics both play important roles in its development and its potential to adapt to function and demand. Genetics contributes to an estimated 45% of the phenotypic determination of both muscle fiber type proportion and its metabolic profile. For example, sedentary black males have higher numbers of type 2 muscle fibers and anaerobic enzymes in the large front thigh muscle, known as the vastus lateralis, than sedentary white males. In contrast, no significant differences in muscle fiber type or capillary density are observed between African American and Caucasian men who are aerobically fit. This has been determined clinically through biopsy analysis, which is the process of removing tissue from patients for the purpose of diagnostic examination. The human body is comprised of three different forms or specific types of muscle tissue that function in different ways, known as skeletal muscle, cardiac muscle, and smooth muscle. Skeletal muscle is more familiar to everyone because it's the one we can see, feel, and touch. It forms well over 600 of the body's nearly 700 individual muscles and constitutes the majority of the body's muscle pool, which is approximately 40 to 50%. Skeletal muscle is attached by tendons to the bones of the skeleton. These sites of tendon attachment are called points of insertion and origin. Skeletal muscle is also called striated muscle because of the presence of alternating dark and light bands. Muscle is predominantly water. A muscle cell consists of about 72% water, 22% protein, 4% fat, and 2% is made up of inorganic matter. Now, the difference is that a fat cell is approximately 15% water, 12% protein, 3% inorganic matter, and 70% fat. So a fat cell is basically a holding station for energy and fat. A muscle cell is mostly made up of water. If you have less fat and more muscle, you can hold more water in your body. And you also need more water when you've got more muscle. So that's why hydration is so important for muscle function. A pound of human muscle contains a potential calorie value of about 600 calories compared to a pound of human fat, which by contrast yields about 3,500 calories, or about six times as much as muscle. So if you have excess fat, you've got more energy stored in your body. Pretty straightforward. Skeletal muscle is also defined based on characteristics of function. These include excitability, contractility, extensibility, and elasticity. Excitability describes how a muscle can receive and respond to stimulus from the nervous system. Contractility refers to the fiber's ability to contract or shorten, such as when you make a muscle by squeezing your biceps. Extensibility is defined by muscle stretch and its ability of muscle fibers to extend through a range of motion. Elasticity refers to muscle recoil and how well and efficiently muscle can return to its original shape after contraction or extension. Encased by a thin film of connective tissue, skeletal muscle fibers are under the control of the voluntary or central nervous system. We think first, then we move. Muscles respond to our command, skeletal muscle. Because individual muscle cells are soft and fragile, they are separated, surrounded, and protected by bands and layers of connective tissue. A special sheath called fasciae, meaning bandage, surrounds each fiber, and deep fascia, bands of connective tissue, hold muscle together and separates them into functional groups. An outer resilient membrane is also present so that muscle fibers can withstand the force and demand of powerful contractions. Training too hard sometimes breaks these membranes. You get a hemorrhaging effect, and that's what sometimes causes the blotches on your skin when you've just really whacked your muscles hard, like a set of squats or some heavy presses. A single skeletal muscle is an organ of the muscular system, just like the pancreas is an organ of the digestive system or the heart is an organ of the circulatory system. Each muscle consists of hundreds and even thousands of independent muscle fibers called fasciculi, which are nicely bundled and wrapped up like a baby in a blanket. Individual muscle fibers are relatively long, cylindrical, and thread-like. A muscle fiber is actually a single muscle cell comprised of an outer membrane called the sarcolemma. It surrounds the fiber's cytoplasm, which contains the guts or the internal substance of the cell. The cytoplasm of a muscle fiber is called sarcoplasm. The technical term for a single muscle cell is myocyte. Myo is a derivative of mys, which is Greek for muscle. So whenever you see or hear a term with the prefix myo, such as myoglobin or myopathy, you know that it has something to do with muscle. Myoglobin, which resembles hemoglobin in function, transports oxygen from the blood to muscle cells. Myopathy refers to any abnormal condition or disease of muscular tissue. Each myocyte, or muscle fiber, is internally packed with additional bundles of finer myofibrils. Myofibrils are the contractile elements of skeletal muscle. Electron micrographs of myofibrils reveal even finer column-like structures called myofilaments. Like pizza crust, myofilaments come in two basic primary sizes, thick and thin. Myofilaments do not extend the entire length of a muscle fiber. They consist of thousands of functional segments or units strung together in long chains. Each unit is highly functional and is arranged in compartments called sarcomeres. During contraction, all of the sarcomeres in a myofibril shorten simultaneously. Each sarcomere is separated by plate-shaped regions of dense material called Z-discs or lines, and here's why it's good to stretch. Stretching actually lengthens each sarcomere and causes individual myofibrils to grow longer by growing new sarcomere segments. So stretching can actually improve both muscle quality and muscle density. Make sure that you're well warmed up before you stretch, though, because if you're too cold and you stretch too hard, you can cause some damage. Thick myofilaments are composed of the protein myosin and correspond to dark A bands. Another filament discovered recently is the elastic filament, consisting of a protein called titin. It helps anchor thick filaments to the Z-discs, which provides additional stability. Thin myofilaments consist primarily of the protein actin, which correspond to light I bands. When viewed under an electron microscope, it is the alternating dark and light bands of the myofilaments that give the appearance of muscle striations. Striations can be seen when fibers are aligned, forming visible stripes. Understanding how myofilaments are arranged and overlap helps us to understand how a muscle fiber contracts and lengthens. Special bands, zones, and lines identified by capital letters of the alphabet, such as A, I, and H bands, or Z and M lines, describe regions specific to the myofilament proteins myosin and actin, where they overlap, and how they interconnect at different points. Skeletal muscle fibers contract when the cross bridges of myosin, or the thick filaments, connect with the actin on the thin filaments. Muscle fibers possess the property of excitability and can be excited by chemical, electrical, and mechanical means. Nerve impulses generated from within the brain and spinal cord normally provide the initial stimulus, which is then conducted through the body along nerve fiber branches. Single nerve fibers can stimulate several hundred muscle fibers at once, or as few as one or two. Nerve cells that stimulate muscle fibers are called motor neurons, and a single motor neuron, including all the muscle fibers it stimulates, is called a motor unit. The process of muscle contraction involves the recruitment of at least one or more motor units. Intense exercise and any physical activity that challenges the body creates a demand for a large degree of muscle fiber recruitment. The ability to recruit motor units depends on the health and condition of our neuromuscular system and is a primary determinant of muscle contraction force and complete muscular development. Here's how it works. Electrical impulses traveling at high speeds move along nerve fibers towards specific muscle fiber bundles. In a split second, the impulse reaches the end of the nerve fiber, but because the motor neuron doesn't actually touch the surface membrane of the target muscle fiber, the electrical impulse from the brain has to be carried across a fluid-filled space called a synaptic gap, or synapse. Impulses transmitted by way of a motor neuron occur as a result of a chemical change called an action potential. When impulses flowing through nerve fibers reach the terminal of a nerve fiber, a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine is released and crosses the synaptic gap between the nerve branch and the muscle fiber surface. Where the motor neuron and muscle fiber meet is known as a neuromuscular junction. This neuromuscular junction is important because some research data compiled from studies in geriatrics and human physiology have recently demonstrated that due to sedentary living, a progressive loss of connections between nerves and the muscle cells they control occurs, making it more difficult for the nervous system to stimulate muscle cells. Resistance training and adequate protein consumption prevents muscle atrophy and increases the body's ratio of muscle to fat, which means more calories are burned at rest, and for every pound of muscle you add, you burn about 50 to 90 more calories at rest per day. After the neurotransmitter acetylcholine is launched as a result of stimulation from a nerve impulse, it diffuses across the synaptic gap until it reaches the surface of the muscle cell, where it then binds with a specific receptor, causing a muscle impulse response. This response initiates chemical changes within the muscle cell, resulting in contraction. The mechanism of actual muscle contraction is based on a sliding filament theory, originally proposed by Hansen and Huxley in the mid-1950s, which today is still being developed and expanded through electron microscopy studies. According to this model, muscle contraction occurs as thin filaments slide over or past the thick ones. The filaments themselves do not shorten in length, but simply slide past one another, causing whole muscle bundles to shorten and change shape, becoming thicker. In a nutshell, myosin cross-bridges pull on actin filaments through attachment, causing them to slide inward. As the filaments slide and sarcomeres shorten, the entire muscle eventually shortens, which is what contraction is all about. Skeletal muscles contract based on what is known as the all-or-nothing principle. An electrical impulse or stimulus, strong enough to elicit a contraction response, will produce maximal contraction of an entire motor unit or none at all. As groups of motor units contract in response to stimulus, more and more groups are recruited in response to compensate for fatigue and continuing effort. Motor unit recruitment is the basis of many training principles and complete muscular development and involvement. For example, in the first set of any given weight-bearing exercise, such as push-ups, only those fibers and motor units of the chest, shoulders, and triceps required to execute the movement will be recruited. As one proceeds with successive repetitions, more and more motor units are recruited. Pushing to the limit, or going to failure, forces a greater recruitment of fibers deep into the heart or the inner core of the target muscle. If you stop before reaching failure, or very close to it, you never really stimulate or recruit the quantity of motor units potentially available. This is where tolerance to pain and mind over matter becomes a requisite for progression in controlled exercise. But pain in this reference is not caused by structural damage, but it's felt as a burning sensation caused by exceeding one's lactate threshold. Blood lactate accumulation is associated with changes in pH, bicarbonate, carbon dioxide, and hydrogen ion concentration. Really what it comes down to is just an excess buildup of hydrogen ions, reducing the pH of the environment, becomes too acidic, and the whole thing comes to an end. You can't continue contracting muscle when they become too acidic in terms of their environment. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from John Shaw Billings. The education of the doctor, which goes on after he has his degree, is, after all, the most important part of his education.